Thank you so much for joining me on this journey. My name is Nicole Bufong, and I will be your host. I decided to start this podcast to document my cannabis story. Then I realized that it was bigger than just me. So this podcast will focus on cannabis and how it affects the lives of people all over the world. I hope to educate you and learn some new things along the way. So welcome to the first podcast episode of Cannabis Connection World, the plant connecting the planet. I decided to create a platform where people can come and get the facts about what is happening in the state of Georgia regarding the cannabis industry. Since 2015, the state has been divided into two parts regarding cannabis: those that want medical marijuana legalized and those that want hemp cultivation legalized. Medical marijuana has various medicinal properties. In countries like Israel, doctors have determined to discover the truth about cannabis. Medical marijuana has various medicinal properties. In countries like Israel, doctors have been determined to discover the truth about cannabis. Despite the laws making it illegal, scientists got access to the plant and embarked on decades-long testing of what the plant can actually do. Through this research, they confirmed that cannabis can manage the pain of patients diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, or HIV, AIDS, cancer, fibromyalgia. I mean, that's just to name a few. Most of us have seen the videos where cannabis oil almost instantly stops convulsions in patients suffering from epilepsy or even Tourette's. The National Institute of Health put out a report just last month, in December of last year, that concludes that treatment with THC, the active component in cannabis, also shrinks tumor growth of certain cancers and kills metastatic breast cancer cells. This research also confirms that using the plant to treat the various diseases does so without being toxic or lethal, unlike the pharmaceuticals that are commonly used. Now, hemp, or industrial hemp, as it's called, is one of the strongest fibers on the planet. For centuries, it has been used in various cultures, from China to Egypt, all over the world. These different cultures have been using hemp to produce clothing, construction materials, and even rope. Before the prohibition of marijuana in 1937 in the United States, industrial hemp was one of the country's major exports. Even plantation owners like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson produced hemp right here in the United States. Today, the United States Navy is the number one purchaser of hemp from China. They use it to make the anchor ropes on their boats, which makes sense because it's one of the strongest fibers on the planet. I feel like it is time those two different groups come together for one common goal: to have reasonable legislation on the books that appeal to both sides. Two different parts of the same plant should not be fighting each other, but come together to connect our one goal. And that is how Cannabis Connection World was born. I decided to focus my energy on Georgia because that's where I live and because the state legislators will vote this year on whether or not to legalize cultivation of medical marijuana and industrial hemp in the state. Georgians will also vote a new governor into office. Why is this important? Because the buck stops at the Capitol. Even if legislators and citizens vote to legalize such a bill, it only takes one veto from the governor to destroy any plans of moving forward in the cannabis space. So how do we accomplish this? How do we move forward in the cannabis industry? We start by educating ourselves with the facts about this healing plant, and we spark the conversation with these new gubernatorial candidates to ensure we collectively support the right one that will launch the state of Georgia into the green industry. I need your help, fellow cannabis connectors, to bring the cannabis community together. Whether it is hemp or medical marijuana, together we win and divided we fall. So please join the movement Cannabis Connectors. One plant, one world. I like to start each episode with something I'm calling Cannabis Class. This will be the segment where I discuss a fact or review a story about cannabis. So this will be our teaching, my teaching moment, so to speak. So this week's cannabis class, we will focus on the history of the prohibition of cannabis, how it all got started. When I heard this story, read this story, researched this story initially, I was just shocked. Not surprised, because I understand that economics runs a lot of things all over the world. And so once I learned the truth about why cannabis was made illegal 80 years ago, I understood the motivation being money, of course, was not far-fetched. So let's start in 1930. That's when the campaign got kicked off. There was a man named Harry Anslinger. He was appointed director of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, later turned into the DEA. He led the campaign to make marijuana illegal. There were two components to Mr. Anslinger's strategy. First, he wanted to spread the message that weed was evil without any scientific proof. Then second, he used racism. At the time, in 1930, United States of America, that was not a concept that was far-fetched. So according to him, only Latinos and Black people were smoking marijuana, and it made them forget their place in society. Those are his words. He worked relentlessly to make it illegal on a federal level, making statements in front of Congress. Quote, "Reefer makes darkies think they're as good as white men," end quote. Or, open quote, "There are 100,000 total marijuana smokers in the U.S., and most of them are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. Their satanic music, jazz, and swing result from marijuana usage. This marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and any others," end quote. His outrageous claims worked. The United States government believed him. He quickly partnered with several other powerful men to embark on this campaign against marijuana. One of those powerful men was named William Hearst. He was the owner at the time of a huge chain of newspapers. Obviously, he did not want to see the development of hemp paper in competition with his investment in timber. At the time, hemp was a very profitable export. William Hearst and Harry Anslinger found allies in the DuPont Chemical Company and various other new pharmaceutical companies in the country. Together, they joined efforts to outlaw cannabis. Pharmaceutical companies were on board with the idea because people had been growing their own medicine for centuries, which meant a massive loss of profits for them. The Federal Narcotics Bureau then put out a movie called Reefer Madness, reflecting that when people smoke the plant, they go crazy. So in conspiracy with economic powerhouses, they formed the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. Together, they launched an anti-marijuana campaign to profit off of manufactured medicine and to deport thousands of migrant workers, mainly of Mexican descent. The act was passed and marijuana became illegal in all 50 states. This action by the U.S. also prompted other nations to do the same, forcing the research of the plant to move underground the last 80 years. All right, that's enough for today. Next episode's cannabis class, we will discuss what happened in 1969 after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the Marijuana Tax Act was unconstitutional. Thank you so much, Senator Harold Jones from Augusta, Georgia, for being with us today. Will you please give our listeners an idea of who you are and where you come from?
Okay. State Senator Harold Jones, I represent District 22, and I represent Augusta, Georgia. I only represent Augusta. Sometimes persons have multiple counties, but I'm lucky to have just Augusta, Georgia only. I was from Augusta. I went to South Carolina State University and then got my law degree from North Carolina Central. And I also am the former solicitor for Augusta, Georgia, which is a prosecutor. So in 2004, I was elected the Richmond County Solicitor General, and I stayed there until I left to run for state senate. And I won the state senate seat in 2014, took office in 2015.
Okay, and since you've been in the Senate, you co-authored a statewide decriminalization bill. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. Little clarification, it's not a true decriminalization bill. What it does, it says up to 1/2 ounce. Right now, the law in Georgia says if you have possession of marijuana from up to 1 ounce, it's a misdemeanor, and then over 1 ounce, it's a felony. So what this law does, it says up to 1/2 ounce, it's a misdemeanor, but unlike standard misdemeanors, which say you can get 12 months probation or $1,000 fine, this says up to 1/2 ounce, you can't get any jail time, and the fine is capped at $300. Then the second aspect of the bill says from 1/2 ounce to 2 ounces, it's a misdemeanor. So those are the changes. So in one sense, it changes. It says no jail time by law, no jail time up to 1/2 ounce, and your fine is capped at $300. And then from 1/2 to 2 ounces, it's just a misdemeanor. Under the current law, anything over 1 ounce is a felony. So this will take that up to 2 ounces.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. What other senators authored this bill with you?
Yeah, various Democrat senators. One that persons in especially Atlanta area might be familiar with is former State Senator Vincent Fort. He also was one of the persons on it. And State Senator Michael Rhett is also on the bill. And so I was the principal author of it. And then, of course, you get co-signers to go forward with it. And last year, we were actually fortunate enough to get it through the Judiciary Committee. So it actually passed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which means that you had to get Republican support to do that because Georgia, of course, is a Republican state. Most of the members on the Judiciary Committee are Republican, so you had to put together a coalition to get that passed. So we actually got it passed out the Judiciary Committee last year.
So what inspired you to author this kind of bill for the state?
Well, I think there's a few things, actually. I think number one is that, you know, when you look at it and you realize that the drug war in itself, to me, has been unnecessary. And so based upon that, we ought to at least look at lowering the penalties really on a lot of different drug offenses, but certainly on the marijuana offenses. You know, when we start talking about persons, when you start talking about a felony, you lose the right to vote. You lose right in Georgia for a Hope Scholarship. You lose the right to other federal programs, assistance programs. Used to be if you lost that right for life, but you still lose that right as far as long as you're on probation. So there's so many consequences to just having possession of marijuana that I said we need to do something about that to where persons can continue to live their life, even if they just have a simple possession charge of marijuana.
You mentioned that the bill is going to be up for legislation in this coming up session. Is that correct?
Correct. That's correct.
That session starts on January 8th. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right.
And so how do we know as citizens when this bill is coming up for vote? What can we do? How can we be a part of the process at this point? I mean, we understand that you as legislators have to vote this bill in either vote yes or vote no for the bill to become law. Is that correct?
That's correct. It has to go through the same process. It's still pending, so it has to go back through the Judiciary Committee again. Of course, it made out of there last time, so hopefully they won't change the vote. So it'll go through the same process. From there, then it goes to what we call rules. And so from rules, that's where it's determined how the vote would take place. But it has to come out of the Rules Committee, and that's where it stopped last time. Once it comes out of the Rules Committee, then the full Senate gets the opportunity to vote on it. So what has to happen is, I have to want to make sure it gets out of Judiciary again, because it'll be the exact same thing. And then from there, go to rules and go to the floor. So you said, what are some things persons can do? Yeah. I can't give you a definite date when it'll be brought up for a vote. It doesn't really work that way. We don't really, there's no definite dates when things are going to be voted on, even on the Judiciary Committee. I quite frankly may not know that when we're going to vote on something on the Judiciary until a couple of days beforehand. Certainly, I will put that out, and we did that before.
Okay.
We put that out. But what can be done beforehand is talk to, number one, your state senator. That's one thing. But number two, also talk to your district attorney and your state solicitor, because they're the ones who are responsible for prosecuting. And so they should take the position. You should encourage them to take the position that they should be in favor of this bill. It doesn't legalize it. Doesn't even decriminalize it. So, but they should be in favor of a bill that at least lessens the penalties, the harsh penalties that face their fellow citizens, Georgia citizens. And if they're in favor of it, they then also can call their senator and representative and say, this is something that we ought to get behind. That carries a lot of weight. Number one, make your direct phone call to your state senator. But then number two, you're also going to call your DA and solicitor and say, you guys should be behind this. Even though you're prosecutors, you know better than anyone. Because I used to be a prosecutor. I was an elected prosecutor. You know better than anybody the effects of these kind of bills or these kind of laws can have on persons. And why would you be against just lessening the penalty? Not decriminalizing it, certainly not legalizing it, but just trying to lessen the penalty. Why would a prosecutor, why would anybody be steadfast to say that just possession only of marijuana has to be a felon if it goes above 1 hour? And no one can give you a good answer to that. So I think that's where we kind of need to direct our energies. State senator and your prosecutor in your town, because then they'll make the call and say, look, my citizens are demanding that you act on this bill and that we can get some more traction going.
Okay. All right. So your state senator and then your district attorney. So you want to reach out in each community, in each city, which each county that has a judicial system or attorney general or district attorney within their community needs to reach out to them. Okay, great. We'll make sure to provide that information out to people of what those numbers are based on their area. Okay, so tell us, you know, who or what has been your biggest, you know, resistance, your biggest challenges in trying to get this passed. I mean, I know how important education is, just informing people. If we're going to support, if we're coming with language that's going to support decriminalizing or lessening the penalty for being caught with the plant, I think that, you know, some of the points that we have to make, like the person that I'm speaking with after our interview, Tina, suffers from multiple sclerosis, and she's been suffering with it for the last 7 years, and recently was arrested in Gwinnett County when she was pulled over and found with 3.5 grams in her car on her way home to take her medicine. And so how do we encourage people like her to state their case and to say, this, I am part of the problem. I am part of people who want to self-medicate because this medicine works for me and for my disease better than pharmaceuticals do. How do I defeat the system? What is my best way to get the medicine that I need without suffering from the laws that exist on the books? I mean, I know that she's a good case, a good example of how we can do that. Or why we should do that, I should say.
Absolutely. She is. Because right now, of course, we have medicinal marijuana that's available, but it comes in the form of oil. But the main thing is we can't really produce it here in Georgia. And so you have to go get this from another city. And, of course, when you're saying she had 3.5 grams, that would not be permissible even under our medical marijuana law.
Exactly.
Because we're using THC oil only, and even that has to be at a very low level.
Exactly.
So, you know, we're just so far behind other states as far as what they're doing, not only at the medicinal level, but of course even on the recreational level. But I think certainly when we start talking about medicinal marijuana, that is something that we focus on. So there's actually two sets of focus. Number one, we had my bill, which deals more with recreational. Then you have increasing the type of marijuana that a person can get, not just the lower THC oil.
Right.
But as you said, even something that she may have, as long as she has a prescription for it. So some of the arguments against that would be that would open the door towards recreational marijuana, things of that nature. But of course, we should be more concerned about people's health and the fact that this helps her instead of worrying about a slippery slope or open door. And I think that we're being very close-minded on that issue.
Absolutely.
But then on the broader issue, when we start talking about opening the door, even on the recreational side, And you had asked me earlier about the things that kind of inspired me to do it, and I told you about some of the penalties. But also the broader issue really is that we as a society, not just even Georgia, we're not really opposed to drugs that affect your sensibilities. We're just opposed to drugs that affect your sensibilities that the state doesn't regulate. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right, yes.
So therefore, when we want to impose these penalties, it's because the state doesn't regulate it. And so, therefore, the answer really should be how to regulate these drugs in a better manner, and to where you can have them from safety. sleeping pills right now on, you know, over the counter.
Right.
Well, those things affect your brain. They depress your nervous system.
Right.
So it's not that we're opposed to things that affect your brain. It's opposed to those things that we say, that we as a society say, oh, well, we haven't regulated that yet, so therefore you can't get it. So the answer really is, how do you regulate? That's really the true answer, instead of trying to make it a criminal offense.
Right.
That's really the true answer.
And that's
because here you have, you know, pills that can put you to sleep on purpose.
Right. That you can get without a prescription over the counter.
You can get without a prescription over the counter.
Yes.
Nobody has a problem.
Right. And that's what Colorado is doing, as being one of the first states to lead the medicinal marijuana and recreational marijuana legislation within their own state.
Right.
Colorado has invested a lot of money in some outside businesses like Amazon and Facebook recognize the potential of researching the plant and have invested a lot of money as private entities into those industries that are doing a lot of research and development around cannabis, marijuana, hemp, all of it combined. And so, yes, I find that that's the answer as well, sir. And it's sad to say that we are far off from that right now. But if we can start with a conversation that recognizes that putting people in prison and ruining their lives for possession of this plant is so ludicrous that we really need to consider how we're going to change our legislation to help people stay out of prison.
Absolutely.
Next, we will be talking to Team Box Cutter, the Budcraft. That's how you'll find him on Instagram, also known as Oski. He's going to be giving us his Cannabis Chronicles, which is a confessional of sorts, talking about cannabis and how it affects their lives.
My name is Oski Woski. I'm from Team Box Cutter, living holistic. Born to a Jamaican farmer, immigrant parents. I'm born into agriculture. My mother's an herbalist who grew up with a very hypocritical access to cannabis. Witnessed his favorite brother's life and yet treated as an enemy. I was diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome at 6 years old. And prescribed various different medications, but my mother being an herbalist and all, and holistic medicine, we didn't crack any for years. Like, I just dealt with the ticks and whatnot, and I we didn't have a problem kind of in my school and whatnot until like middle school. My middle school, the stuff began to get troublesome around the time when my father began to die. Around that time, I got diagnosed with other things like depression and anxiety disorder, bipolar disorder, stuff that happens, you know, like stuff that actually would be a kid, you know, freaking out about his father dying of cancer and whatnot. But, and they went to prescribe me a slew of medications, clonidine, Haldol, Wellbutrin, Zyprex, Depakote, Serazone, Zoloft, Alprazolam, Buspar, Paxil, Prozac, Serazone. The list is extensive, man. Plenty of them I've seen on lawsuits. But the entire time, I kind of just like I really bucked them the entire time and didn't want to take them. And when my father passed, when I was 14 years old, that's when I really just kind of was like no, completely no. Around 12 years old, around that same time as well, that's when I actually started medicating with cannabis. An older homie of mine was the weed man, the weed guy. I got a brother Rastaman for a father and whatnot. And he was getting us into moving the herb and whatnot. Being so, I got into it pretty decent, and I was using the Medicaid. I didn't know at that time because all I was doing was like breaking rules, I guess. And anyhow, I completely refused to stop taking them. I mean, refused to take them at like about 14 years old, and I went to Medicaid with cannabis completely. I watched my father die of prostate cancer in the between like 11 to 14. And I seen him like pretty much stay away from cannabis and everything from during the process, because not that we didn't know about it, or some family didn't know about it, because remember, we come from agriculture and they grew up with access to it. But because of the fear of what, you know, the repercussions would be with him using it and with me and all stuff like that, he pretty much just they shunned it, you know what I mean? Ended up really kind of suffering more than he should have, and lost his life behind it. I never been arrested. so I can't really say that I've been, besides the aspect of me hustling weed my whole life, I wasn't the dude who was like, you know, I would say irresponsible with it, I guess. I was taught by the Rasta man who understood this as a food, as a herb. You know, so we didn't really, I didn't dabble too much in other drugs and stuff like that. And being from Miami, there's a lot of other things that it's pretty much the only economy down there beyond the working world is the drug economy. So, you know, our team pretty much just kept it exclusive to cannabis. Anywho, I started growing cannabis around like maybe, I probably grew my first plant around 15 years old, just because we always had seeds and whatnot. And we just grow it because it was fun to do and beautiful as well. And we loved the plant. And we didn't get serious with it until like maybe the late 90s. In the late 90s, some of the Cuban homies started, that's when I started booming houses and whatnot. And I got taught how to use NFT system. That's a nutrient film technique. That's like the hydroponic setup that you would see with the water system, that the reservoir up under it, and then the plants would be on a stand, kind of leaning down, and the fluid would cycle through it with a pump. The nutrients are inside of that reservoir. That's called a nutrient film technique. It's basically the go-to hydroponic grow system for indoor. You can use it outdoors as well. It's just the hydroponic grow system. Just basically how to grow plants in water. I just realized the other day that it kind of took me years to get it right and how to actually do it correctly. Just to make, you know, the plants properly do what they do. I actually switched from the NFT technique and started going into a soil technique and a scrogging method. Just found out that was the name of it. But anywho, around 06 in December, man, I got raided in a grove. And for the first time getting jammed with weed in my life, me and my now wife got hit up inside of a grove. And we ended up, we were around facing 30 years and whatnot. 30 life, actually, in my case. And the battle was like 2 years. And at that 2 year battle on a pretrial is when I actually fell victim to pharmaceuticals. That's when it hit me for real. Because I definitely could not use cannabis then. You know what I mean? Because I had to fight the case from the inside. So, me and my wife fell victim to benzodiazepine. I got my prescription, and I started taking my prescription like I was supposed to, I guess. And you feel me? And just I would give it to my wife as well because she couldn't take cannabis. I was like, here, take these. They'll help you calm down. And took 2 years, man, fighting the charges, running around the police chasing me all day long. It was hell in a handbasket, man. Still to this day, I bear scars of them drugs, man, in my brain. I tried to quit. I quit cold turkey when I took my prison time. I quit cold turkey and I had a seizure that almost killed me. Left me in the hospital for a couple of weeks and whatnot. I when I got out of prison, I couldn't think straight still. Like, I still couldn't get my mind back together. Like, I actually was smoking weed in prison, but I was actually good in there. When I got back out, I had extra probation to go to and stuff, so I couldn't smoke properly and whatnot. So I ended up having to I had like benzodiazepines on the fly. Like, I would take them now and then at nighttime and stuff, try to go to sleep and whatnot. Otherwise, like the tics and the anxiety, and now I got this new case of PTSD coming up out of the situation that I've been in. You know what I'm saying? Running around in this constant state of fear and anxiety, just I couldn't deal with it. I pretty much thought that I was gonna have to be on drugs for the rest of my life, man. I was wondering how it's gonna be. I didn't know how. And then having to resort to a few other people, ended up having to you know what I'm saying, like learn how to decarboxylate and maneuver the cannabinoids and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? And just when I did that, I got an edible inside of me, pretty much for the first time, that was strong enough to mimic up anxiety, basically. You know what I'm saying? To give me the relief that I needed. Can you get it? Because at this point, smoking no longer is sufficient to damage my brain. After I finally ate a strong enough amount and got that relief, man, I was, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that cannabis actually could get strong enough to give me relief like that, man, mentally and all type of stuff. So when I seen that, like, long story short, that got me following the science of it properly and studying it, researching it, and learning how to maneuver this, and, like, you know, realizing that I'm not a criminal here, and all that I have and all that I know is this plant. Like, I can't be backing down the knowledge of it no more.
I thank you for joining me for the Cannabis Connection World. I truly believe that in order for us to end this 80-year prohibition on this life-saving plant, we have to use the facts. I hope you learned something today that you can take with you and teach someone else about the facts in dealing with this plant. Facts is how we will end the 80-year prohibition against cannabis. So until next time, you can catch me on Instagram at Cannabis Connection Podcast or on Twitter at CannaCon World. That's CannaCon World. That's the Twitter handler. Or you can catch me on Facebook at Mary Jane Connectors. Three words, Mary Jane Connectors. Here at Cannabis Connection World, we are on a mission to show how cannabis connects the world. I strongly believe that if you know the facts, you can share the knowledge. The cannabis movement is strong in numbers, and that is how you change policy. We don't want this industry to look like Silicon Valley, where only one part of the population is represented. Having a seat at the table is very important. I can't do it alone, so I need your help, fellow Cannabis Connectors, to spread the gospel truth about cannabis. So join me for the next episode of Cannabis Connection World. But until then, you can follow me on Instagram at Cannabis Connection Podcast, on Facebook at Mary Jane Connectors, or on Twitter at CannaCon World. That's CannaCon World. Until then, love, peace, and happy connecting.